Chapter 53. As the course of this tale requires that we should become acquainted, somewhere hereabouts, with a few particulars connected with the domestic economy of Mr. Sampson Brass, and as a more convenient place than the present is not likely to occur for that purpose, the historian takes the friendly reader by the hand, and springing with him into the air, and cleaving the same at a greater rate than ever Don Cleophas Leandro Paris Zambello and his familiar traveled through that pleasant region in company, alights with him upon the pavement of Bevis Marks. The intrepid aeronauts alight before a small dark house, once the residence of Mr. Sampson Brass. In the parlor window of this little habitation, which is so close upon the footway that the passenger who takes the wall brushes the dim glass with his coat sleeve much to its improvement, for it is very dirty in this parlor window in the days of its occupation by Sampson Brass, there hung, all awry and slack, and discolored by the sun, a curtain of faded green, so threadbare from long service, as by no means to intercept the view of the little dark room, but rather to afford a favorable medium through which to observe it accurately. There was not much to look at. A rickety table, with spare bundles of papers, yellow and ragged from long carriage in the pocket, ostentatiously displayed upon its top. A couple of stools set face to face on opposite sides of this crazy piece of furniture. A treacherous old chair by the fireplace, whose withered arms had hugged full many a client, and helped to squeeze him dry, a second-hand wig box, used as a depository for blank writs, and declarations and other small forms of law, once the sole contents of the head which belonged to the wig which belonged to the box, as they were now of the box itself, two or three common books of practice, a jar of ink, a pounce box, a stunted hearth broom, a carpet trodden to shreds, but still clinging with the tightness of desperation to its taxes, with the yellow wainscot of the walls, the smoke-discolored ceiling, the dust and cobwebs, were among the most prominent decorations of the office of Mr. Sampson Brass. But this was mere still life, of no greater importance than the plate, brass, solicitor, apostrophe upon the door, and the bill, first floor to let to a single gentleman, apostrophe which was tied to the knocker. The office commonly held two examples of animated nature, more to the purpose of this history, and in whom it has a stronger interest, and more particular concern. Of these, one was Mr. Brass himself, who has already appeared in these pages. The other was his clerk, assistant, housekeeper, secretary, confidential plotter, adviser, intriguer, and bill of costing grocer, Miss Brass, a kind of Amazon at common law, of whom it may be desirable to offer a brief description. Miss Sally Brass, then, was a lady of 35 or thereabouts, of a gaunt and bony figure, and a resolute bearing, which if it repressed the softer emotions of love, and kept admirers at a distance, certainly inspired a feeling akin to awe in the breasts of those male strangers who had the happiness to approach her. In face she bore a striking resemblance to her brother, Sampson, so exact, indeed, was the likeness between them, that had it consorted with Miss Brass's maiden modesty and gentle womanhood, to have assumed her brother's clothes in a frolic and sat down beside him, it would have been difficult for the oldest friend of the family to determine which was Sampson and which Sally, especially as the lady carried upon her upper lip certain reddish demonstrations, which, if the imagination had been assisted by her attire, might have been mistaken for a beard. These were, however, in all probability, nothing more than eyelashes in a wrong place, as the eyes of Miss Brass were quite free from any such natural impertinences. In complexion Miss Brass was sallow, rather a dirty sallow, so to speak, but this hue was agreeably relieved by the healthy glow which mantled in the extreme tip of her laughing nose. Her voice was exceedingly impressive, deep and rich in quality, and, once heard, not easily forgotten. Her usual dress was a green gown, in color not unlike the curtain of the office window, made tight to the figure, and terminating at the throat, where it was fastened behind by a peculiarly large and massive button. feeling, no doubt, that simplicity and plainness are the soul of elegance. Miss Brass wore no collar or kerchief except upon her head, which was invariably ornamented with a brown gauze scarf, like the wing of the fabled vampire, and which, twisted into any form that happened to suggest itself, formed an easy and graceful headdress. Such was Miss Brass in person. In mind, she was of a strong and vigorous turn, having from her earliest youth devoted herself with uncommon ardor to the study of law, not wasting her speculations upon its eagle flights, which are rare, but tracing it attentively through all the slippery and eel-like crawlings in which it commonly pursues its way. Nor had she, like many persons of great intellect, confined herself to theory, or stopped short where practical usefulness begins, inasmuch as she could ingress, fair copy, fill up printed forms with perfect accuracy, and, in short, transact any ordinary duty of the office down to pouncing a skin of parchment or mending a pen. It is difficult to understand how, possessed of these combined attractions, she should remain Miss Brass, but whether she had steeled her heart against mankind, or whether those who might have wooed and won her were deterred by fears that, being learned in the law, she might have too near her fingers' ends those particular statutes which regulate what are familiarly termed actions for breach, certain it is that she was still in a state of celibacy, and still in daily occupation of her old stool opposite to that of her brother Samson. And equally certain it is, by the way, that between these two stools a great many people had come to the ground. One morning Mr. Sampson Brass sat upon his stool copying some legal process, and viciously digging his pen deep into the paper, as if he were writing upon the very heart of the party against whom it was directed. And Miss Sally Brass sat upon her stool making a new pen preparatory to drawing out a little bill, which was her favorite occupation. And so they sat in silence for a long time, until Miss Brass broke silence. "Have you nearly done, Sammy?" " said Miss Brass, for in her mild and feminine lips, Samson became Sammy, and all things were softened down. "No," returned her brother. "It would have been all done, though, if you had helped at the right time." "Oh yes, indeed," cried Miss Sally. "You want my help, don't you? You two, that are going to keep a clerk. Am I going to keep a clerk for my own pleasure, or because of my own wish, you provoking rascal?" " said Mr. Brass, putting his pen in his mouth, and grinning spitefully at his sister. "What do you taunt me about going to keep a clerk for?" It may be observed in this place, lest the fact of Mr. Brass calling a lady a rascal should occasion any wonderment or surprise, that he was so habituated to having her near him in a man's capacity, that he had gradually accustomed himself to talk to her as though she were really a man. And this feeling was so perfectly reciprocal, that not only did Mr. Brass often call Miss Brass a rascal, or even put an adjective before the rascal, but Miss Brass looked upon it as quite a matter of course, and was as little moved as any other lady would be by being called an angel. "What do you taunt me, after 3 hours' talk last night, with going to keep a clerk for?" repeated Mr. Brass, grinning again with the pen in his mouth, like some nobleman's or gentleman's crest. "Is it my fault?" "All I know is," said Miss Sally, smiling dryly, for she delighted in nothing so much as irritating her brother, "that if every one of your clients is to force us to keep a clerk, whether we want to or not, you had better leave off business, strike yourself off the roll, and get taken in execution as soon as you can." "Have we got any other client like him?" said Brass. "Have we got another client like him now? Will you answer me that?" "Do you mean in the face?" said his sister. "Do I mean in the face?" sneered Samson Brass, reaching over to take up the bill book, and fluttering its leaves rapidly. Look here, Daniel Quilp Esquire, Daniel Quilp Esquire, Daniel Quilp Esquire, all through. Whether should I take a clerk that he recommends, and says, this is the man for you, or lose all this, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Miss Sally deigned to make no reply, but smiled again, and went on with her work. But I know what it is, apostrophe resumed Brass after a short silence. You're afraid you won't have as long a finger in the business as you've been used to have. Do you think I don't see through that? Apostrophe, the business wouldn't go on very long, I expect, without me, apostrophe returned his sister composedly. Don't you be a fool and provoke me, Sammy, but mind what you're doing, and do it. Apostrophe, Samson Brass, who was at heart in great fear of his sister, sulkily bent over his writing again, and listened as she said. If I determined that the clerk ought not to come, of course he wouldn't be allowed to come. You know that well enough, so don't talk nonsense. Apostrophe, Mr. Brass received this observation with increased meekness, merely remarking, under his breath, that he didn't like that kind of joking, and that Miss Sally would be a much better fellow if she forbore to aggravate him. To this compliment, Miss Sally replied that she had a relish for the amusement, and had no intention to forego its gratification. Mr. Brass not caring, as it seemed, to pursue the subject any further, they both plied their pens at a great pace, and there the discussion ended. While they were thus employed, the window was suddenly darkened, as by some person standing close against it. As Mr. Brass and Miss Sally looked up to ascertain the cause, the top sash was nimbly lowered from without, and Quilp thrust in his head. Hallo! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said, standing on tiptoe on the windowsill, and looking down into the room. Is there anybody at home? Is there any of the devil's ware here? Is Brass at a premium, eh? Apostrophe, ha, ha, ha. Apostrophe, apostrophe, laughed the lawyer in an affected ecstasy. Oh, very good, sir. Oh, very good indeed. Quite eccentric. Dear me, what humor he has. Apostrophe, apostrophe, is that my Sally? Apostrophe, apostrophe, croaked the dwarf, ogling the fair Miss Brass. Is it justice with the bandage off her eyes, and without the sword and scales? Is it the strong arm of the law? Is it the Virgin of Bevis? Apostrophe, apostrophe, what an amazing flow of spirits! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Brass. Upon my word, it's quite extraordinary. Apostrophe, apostrophe, open the door, apostrophe, said Quilp, I've got him here. Such a clerk for you, Brass, such a prize, such an ace of trumps. Be quick and open the door, or if there's another lawyer near, and he should happen to look out of window, he'll snap him up before your eyes, he will. Apostrophe, it is probable that the loss of the phoenix of clerks, even to a rival practitioner, would not have broken Mr. Brass's heart. But, pretending great alacrity, he rose from his seat, and going to the door, returned, introducing his client, who led by the hand no less a person than Mr. Richard Swiveller. There she is, apostrophe said Quilp, stopping short at the door, and wrinkling up his eyebrows as he looked towards Miss Sally. There is the woman I ought to have married, there is the beautiful Sarah, there is the female who has all the charms of her sex, and none of their weaknesses. Oh, Sally, Sally! Apostrophe, to this amorous address Miss Brass briefly responded, bother! Apostrophe, apostrophe, hard-hearted as the metal from which she takes her name, apostrophe said Quilp. Why don't she change it, melt down the brass, and take another name? Apostrophe, apostrophe, hold your nonsense, Mr. Quilp, do, apostrophe returned Miss Sally, with a grim smile. I wonder you're not ashamed of yourself before a strange young man. Apostrophe, the strange young man, apostrophe said Quilp, handing Dick Swiveller forward, is too susceptible himself, not to understand me well. This is Mr. Swiveller, my intimate friend, a gentleman of good family and great expectations, but who, having rather involved himself by youthful indiscretion, is content for a time to fill the humble station of a clerk humble, but here most enviable. What a delicious atmosphere! apostrophe apostrophe if Mr. Quilt spoke figuratively and meant to imply that the air breathed by Miss Sally Brass was sweetened and rarefied by that dainty creature, he had doubtless good reason for what he said. But if he spoke of the delights of the atmosphere of Mr. Brass's office in a literal sense, he had certainly a peculiar taste, as it was of a close and earthy kind, and, besides being frequently impregnated with strong whiffs of the second-hand wearing apparel exposed for sale in Duke's Plus and Houndsditch, had a decided flavor of rats and mice, and a taint of moldiness. Perhaps some doubts of its pure delight presented themselves to Mr. Swiveller, as he gave vent to one or two short abrupt sniffs, and looked incredulously at the grinning dwarf. Mr. Swiveller, apostrophe said Quilp, being pretty well accustomed to the agricultural pursuits of sowing wild oats, Miss Sally, prudently considers that half a loaf is better than no bread. To be out of harm's way he prudently thinks is something too, and therefore he accepts your brother's offer. Brass, Mr. Swiveller is yours. Apostrophe, I am very glad, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Brass, very glad indeed. Mr. Swiveller, sir, is fortunate enough to have your friendship. You may be very proud, sir, to have the friendship of Mr. Quilp. Apostrophe, Dick murmured something about never wanting a friend, or a bottle to give him, and also gasped forth his favorite allusion to the wing of friendship, and its never molting a feather, but his faculties appeared to be absorbed in the contemplation of Miss Sally Brass, at whom he stared with blank and rueful looks, which delighted the watchful dwarf beyond measure. As to the divine Miss Sally herself, she rubbed her hands as men of business do, and took a few turns up and down the office with her pen behind her ear. I suppose, apostrophe said the dwarf, turning briskly to his legal friend, that Mr. Swiveller enters upon his duties at once? It's Monday morning. Apostrophe, at once, if you please, sir, by all means, apostrophe returned Brass. Miss Sally will teach him law, the delightful study of the law, apostrophe said Quilp. She'll be his guide, his friend, his companion, his Blackstone, his Coke upon Littleton, his young lawyer's best companion. Apostrophe, he is exceedingly eloquent, apostrophe said Brass, like a man abstracted, and looking at the roofs of the opposite houses, with his hands in his pockets. He has an extraordinary flow of language. Beautiful, really. Apostrophe, with Miss Sally, apostrophe Quilp went on, and the beautiful fictions of the law, his days will pass like minutes. Those charming creations of the poet, John Doe and Richard Roe, when they first dawn upon him, will open a new world for the enlargement of his mind, and the improvement of his heart. Apostrophe, oh, beautiful, beautiful. Beautiful indeed. Apostrophe cried Brass. It's a treat to hear him. Apostrophe apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.